Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Indeed. Are you ready for a road trip?
Oh, not like this one, baby.
I've got this nice van, and it's solid. There's no way anything will go wrong with it. It'll get us to California for sure.
Is it a classic car?
It's a classic. Oh, I love it. This movie, man. Little Miss Sunshine from 2006.
It is.
I think
bonkers.
This is our third Toni Collette mom movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking, I think about a boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was the mom in The Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is again. And I don't know if we did have done any others, but she's good. Every one of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's always good.
Yeah.
And Greg Kinnear, I've always been very fond of. From the time he kind of appeared on the acting scene when he was going to be the next big thing, and poor guy never made it to the next big thing. But he's been in some good movies. I always like him.
Yeah, I enjoy him too. And Steve Carell. Yeah.
Yes.
I think this was this before The Office, maybe? No, actually, yeah, it couldn't have been.
But The Office, he'd been in The Office, I think in 2005, maybe? That was the beginning of it. So, yeah, quick bit of trivia. When he was cast, he was unknown.
Yeah, okay.
By the time a year later they were promoting the movie, he was the hot star.
That's right.
So his name was on everything. He was doing all the interviews and everything. And before it had been, Alan Arkin and that kind of thing. Paul Dano is in this, and this was before he was known. And I haven't really seen anything else he's in, but I know he's a big deal. Abigail Breslin, all these people.
Yeah. Alan Arkin, don't forget Alan Arkin, the great.
I thought I said him.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay. I missed it if you did, but he's great and a favorite of mine forever. Yeah.
Well, he is, and I have to say, every Halloween I keep meaning to do, is it Wait Until Dark? Isn't that the name of it? He is the creepiest, most psycho guy ever in that.
Mm.
Yeah, just... He's so good. Okay. And then, of course, here he's playing.
I don't think I've seen that. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you haven't seen it?
I don't think I have.
Yeah. Audrey Hepburn is this blind woman.
Oh, boy.
In it. Yeah. And she's being targeted by these thieves for a certain reason.
Okay.
Yeah. It's great.
Okay. I'm gonna catch up with that one. For sure. But yeah, I love him in lots of stuff. I think the most recent thing besides this that I rewatched not long ago was Argo. And he was in Argo, and he's very good in that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That movie is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. So what is this movie we have before us today?
So this movie is about a family that is... You watch this and you're like, this is one of the most dysfunctional families I have ever seen.
Mm.
And the youngest member of the family is Olive. She's 7. And she has accidentally, really, won this beauty pageant contest for Little Miss Sunshine, or the regionals for Little Miss Sunshine. So they've got to get out to... Is it Redondo Beach, they call it?
Yeah, Redondo
California.
Beach.
Yep. And in 3 days or whatever to make this contest, by the time they get the phone call and everything. And just watching this family interact can be so painful. It's very funny, but I will say, and we can talk about all this later, when I first saw it, I was like, I didn't think it was as funny as everybody else thought it was. And there's a part at the end that I found really disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but all these people loved it.
Hmm.
And Rose, who I quote often on this podcast, said it's because it captured a lot of people's attention who'd never seen an indie movie before.
Hmm.
And okay. I thought, oh, that's interesting. But the thing is that my mother then said, when she moved in many years later, said, I love Little Miss Sunshine. And she said, the second time she saw it, she said, it's not as funny as I thought it was. It's kind of disturbing. And I said, wow, I'm liking this a lot more than I did before. But it's because thanks to you and our talking about things, I was seeing things in it that I was like, oh, there are redemption arcs all over the place here.
There definitely are.
Yeah. And then I came across some other stuff that just really opened the movie up for me. And I now it's just one of my favorites to talk about.
Oh, that's cool.
There's so much in it. And it gets funnier for me because of that. You know, I can really appreciate it. So, yeah, this is just them going on that road trip.
Them going on the road trip, yeah.
It is a doozy, baby.
But I loved at the very beginning how they introduced everybody. yeah. And they're all separate. None of them are together, right? And we see Olive watching TV by herself, watching some, I think it was a pageant that she was watching.
It was Miss California.
Miss California, that's right, yep. And then we have Greg Kinnear, the father of the family, who is giving a lecture on his 9 points or nine steps, his nine-step process. That is going to be...
to being a winner.
Yeah, to being a winner. That's right. And he's giving this lecture as the camera pans out to like six people. It was awesome. Yeah. It was awesome. And then we see Toni Collette driving on the phone, smoking a cigarette all at the same time. Obviously just rush, rush, rush.
And, but she's saying she's talking on the phone to, I think it's her husband, right? Because she's saying, no, no, I'm not smoking. And she throws the cigarette away.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying, I have to get him. There's no one else to go get him.
Right, right. Yep, that's right. And then we see Frank, who is her brother, all by himself, sitting, looking out a window. And then Toni Collette pulls up, and it turns out that he had just recently attempted suicide. All this is at the very beginning of the movie, so we're not giving anything away. And she's has to pick him up, right? She's, you know, so she picks him up. And anyway, I just thought it was a really, really cool way to open the movie with everybody just spread out. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. You forgot the grandfather who's busy snorting heroin, find out, in the bathroom.
In the bathroom, yep.
And the son of the family. Teenage son,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Who's reading a book that I never caught the title of, but he's extremely unhappy looking. And there's a huge poster of Friedrich Nietzsche, as he say it, on his wall. Room, I mean, huge.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a shirt with him on it, too. So he's got a theme.
He's got a theme going. Yes. Oh, I love it. But yeah, so it's about this family. And then very shortly after they're all introduced, we see them all at the dinner table, coming together at the dinner table. And then from then on out, it is this road trip. And this road trip from hell.
Oh, yeah.
But that is the movie. And it is funny. It's cringy, you know, which is funny that we mentioned The Office a little earlier because he... sometimes that's the same way. Sometimes it's hard to watch, you know.
A lot of the time, yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, you know, I guess in a similar way. But they're because it is so tragic, you know. You're just seeing these people say things to each other. It's just, you know, oh man.
Well, you know, it's cringy.
It can be cringy,
right? Yeah. Right. And what you really see at the dinner table, so we've seen all these people individually. And the dinner table brings them together because Frank, Steve Carell, who's still got the bandages on his wrist because he tried to kill himself, doesn't know who all these people are. I mean, he knows, you know, his sister and his brother-in-law, but he's not obviously been around the family very much, and certainly not for recent developments. So the son of the family is not talking. He will, if he can't get through with sign language, he will write things down on a little notepad and show it to you.
Yeah.
And always in capitals, always with exclamation points and underlined and
I hate very angry. Everyone. Yeah.
Right. You're awful. And the mother explains that he is dedicated to becoming a jet fighter pilot. And until he goes through all the training and learns to do it, he has taken a vow of silence. And I just like, these things have nothing to do with each other, but okay. And at that point is when the father says, and he's showing self-discipline. That's one step number such and so of the program. He's a winner, you know, and it's like, dang, you know. And so and the father is spouting off about something. And then it comes out that he's been kicked out of the retirement home he was in for, was it for snorting heroin and stuff like that, and just misbehaving in a terrible way. Mm-hmm. And so everybody at the table, you know, the wife has been working and working to support her husband while this 9-step program comes out as a book. So she is trying to take care of the family, but she is so busy she can't see straight. So they're eating, you know, chicken out of the bucket and paper plates, and so they can't have a real family environment. So the whole thing is just a disaster as you see them kind of interacting with each other. And Frank is the one who often we learn things through, especially early on, because he's, you know, explaining. And so, and I mean, it's talk about cringy at one point, because Olive is the one innocent, pure person there. She is a true 7-year-old. Yeah. She has not been touched by any of this. So she's not the wise mouth Hollywood smart cracking kid. She's not, you know, cynical. She's not doing anything weird. She just wants to be in a beauty contest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, little girls do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right. The fact that there are little girl beauty contests has its own problems, oh, as we'll see.
So disturbing. But
that's,
yeah,
that's for down the road.
Right.
So she's the one who's asking innocent questions of Frank, like, why, what happened to you? And the mother's going, no, honesty's okay. And at this point, I'm with the father who's going, we don't need to talk about it. And so it's getting explained. So then we learn Frank's backstory, which he has had an unhappy love affair. He is the top Proust scholar in the United States, which keeps getting mentioned over and over. And so I guess we're, obviously, we've edged into spoiler territory.
Yeah, we sure have. If we want to just, that's what this movie is, but definitely it's well worth a watch. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really funny.
Yeah.
And so, we'll continue into the spoiler territory. Mm-hmm. And so, what I didn't catch when I was watching this the first time, especially, is that this movie is actually a long commentary on choosing from two different ways to live, to look at life and to live it.
And that's Proust and Nietzsche?
Proust and Nietzsche.
Yeah, which I know. I knew about Nietzsche. I didn't know anything about Proust, but please go ahead.
Marcel Proust, he wrote In Search of Lost Time. It's the longest novel ever written. And the thing that's great, amazing about that, I believe that's the novel that was prompted by him eating a Madeleine at a cafe, which is like a, you know, kind of a sponge cookie. It's kind of got a lemony flavor, I think, and drinking some tea. And the memory took him right back to when he was a kid and his aunt or somebody would serve these. Mm-hmm. And so he started writing this book. And evidently, it's also got radical views on life, this little summary says. But something I found was talking about the fact that the movie is actually looking at slivers. It's significant slivers of Proust and Nietzsche about the meaning of suffering, which is real interesting because this movie, as you say, all those cringeworthy moments, people are suffering somewhere, and someone usually from that family is causing the suffering.
Mm.
Not always.
Yeah.
But what's making you cringe is that the family member is doing it to the other family member. So Nietzsche had moral relativism, which is that each person has to create their own standards by which to live. And Proust is, out of life's suffering comes the meaning of life and happiness.
Hmm.
Well, hello, Catholicism.
Yeah.
Right. because how we approach suffering and what we learn from it and what God uses it for to help us progress in life, which sounds very dark, but it is not. and you could probably say it better since you talk about this with your RCIA classes, mm-hmm. but those two contrasts
yeah.
are the contrast between the modern world right now and how Catholics try to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what, you know, why we talk a little bit about, you know, not being part of the world, being in it, but not part of it.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. But right, it's the reaction to it, you know. I think people, often new people come, you know, seeing Christianity as a way, you know, to, I would say, avoid suffering. You know, it's like if I, mm-hmm. if I do the right things, then I won't suffer, which is a incorrect view that sometimes people have, because that's not how it works.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, we Christians suffer plenty. Believe me.
We definitely do.
But yeah, but it's our reaction to it. And we have a model in Christ who suffered intensely and took the suffering upon himself too. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But I love that. I love those. Yeah. And in Nietzsche's viewpoint with this relativism, you know, of course it's problematic because how can you, you know, how can you argue with someone who's come up with their own morals if it's like, I don't know, hurting other people, for example, you know, how do you argue with that? You say, oh, well, we're supposed to come up with our own. And it, as soon as you say that's wrong, then you're like, okay, well, there is a moral standard then, you know?
Right.
So, right.
If everybody likes to talk about this is my truth,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And yeah,
that's gone too far, right?
Right. And I guess it's definitely skipping ahead, but I'm thinking about this going, it's interesting because Frank often, ironically, and for comedy, would be pushing this van. And mm-hmm. he'd go, did I mention that I'm the top Proust scholar in the U.S. as he's doing this?
Pushing you know, this. Yeah.
I love really that. Funny.
So
yeah,
good.
So, but clearly, based on his own story, he understood the theory, but he didn't have to live it for Proust's attitude towards suffering. So in embracing his philosophy, he never lived it through suffering or just through life itself, which doesn't always have to be suffering. But as thing after, and he's telling his story at the beginning, he goes, well, this happened. And she goes, oh, then you tried to kill yourself. No, no. Then this. Oh, then. No, no. And about five things down, he goes, then this happened to me. I didn't win this award. That was it for me.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're just going, yeah, you learned nothing. You had all those chances. You learned
oh my
zip.
Gosh. Oh, isn't that
until
fun?
The end of the movie, right?
That is when so well put.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of so there's all that, and we can talk about there's some wonderful moments of grace that each character experiences that kind of show what the movie's trying to do. But the other thing is that it's looking at the family so well.
Yeah.
You know, families can live each person to themselves, but it's not fully lived until they're living for each other.
Wow. Yeah, this really is a nice movie. I mean, the you've got all six of these individuals, and they're all going through these things, and they're a family too. You know,
yeah.
That's super interesting. You know, I'm thinking about it more deeply as you're talking, and I mean, like you take the father, and he is going through his own philosophy, right? These nine steps that he came up with to success, mm-hmm. and not being a loser, right? And while being presented with loserness himself, right? Because he's trying to sell this book. Obviously, he's not making any money. He's got this deal on the works, and then it falls through while they're on their trip. And he's confronted with his own philosophy failing him, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so good. And then you have the teenage kid who has taken this vow of silence for this goal, however that's connected. And he's alienating people. He's angry at people. And then he has this moment where he finds out that he's colorblind. And now what's it all for, you know? Suddenly all the stuff that he had come up with to be the way to live a life is no longer valid. in that moment, you know. So his philosophy fell apart too.
Right, it did. Mm-hmm. And so really quickly, I just wanted to add one thing to what you said about Richard, who's the father.
Yeah.
He loses his book deal.
Right.
And he's rejected. But what he does is, he says, here's the thing we're going to do. We're going to get Olive to that pageant on time.
Mm.
So that's his moment of grace in the movie. I mean, he has, you're right. He's got the rock bottom moment.
Right. And that rock bottom moment. And then the grace is when you make the decision in the moment, right?
Right.
Which is what you were talking about earlier, our reaction to the suffering.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so Dwayne, the son, has his moments of, you know, complete pain and sorrow. And you get it. This is the one thing he's wanted, and he can't have it. And it's absolute. You cannot change it. He's colorblind, and that's needed to be a fly jet plane. But his moment of grace is he apologizes to his family for all the things he said when he was so upset.
Yeah, that was beautiful, too.
Yeah.
And I loved it, too, because he makes him stop the van. He runs out of the van. He's sitting there. He's telling his mom, just leave me here. Just leave me here, you know. And then they send the 7-year-old over. And she doesn't say a word, you know. She just hugs him. And he just says, okay, you know. I love that moment. That was a beautiful moment.
It was beautiful. And it's interesting because it was foreshadowed by Dwayne's own prompting in the waiting room. They're waiting because the grandfather has died, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the mother is crying, and she goes, because we're family or whatever. And she's crying, and no one's touching her.
Mm-hmm.
Frank would kind of like to touch her, but, you know. And so Dwayne tells Olive to go hug mom because she's crying. And so that she does that, and that's what she needed. So Olive has learned someone's crying and you can't help them. You go hug them. Wow. So she does that for Dwayne. And that brings him back.
Beautiful.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't so, connect that, but yeah, you're absolutely right. So, that's great.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the family, you see the family, and we come back. I want to come back to what you were talking about before, which is everybody's moment of having a breakdown, that they're kind of their lowest moment, but where their philosophy falls apart. I love that you're kind of seeing all these moments. But the family does not ever show each other kindness. They have to learn to do it on this trip.
Mm.
And so the first time we see kindness being shown in this way is when the father, Richard, is picking on Olive, essentially, because she ordered waffles a la mode, which means with ice cream. And he suddenly starts talking about, well, if you eat ice cream, that means you'll get fat. And not that you're fat, but you know this. And beauty queens don't eat ice cream, and they're thin. Well, Olive, the actress, was wearing a fat suit, but she's definitely chubby.
Mm-hmm.
This has never occurred to her before, that she could be fat, that you've got this other requirement to be a beauty queen. She thought it was about the talent and being beautiful and all this stuff, but she didn't stop and analyze it. No one taught her that. And you can watch her self-esteem start to go down the drain. And when that happens, the ice cream shows up and she's like, I don't want it. And the grandfather grabs a spoon and says, well, I'm going to have some. Everybody, not the father, but the mother, Dwayne, Frank, everybody are eating the ice cream. And you're like, I'm sure I want some. It's so good. And she finally just starts laughing and goes, don't eat all of it. And she eats some too. And the father still is going to start. And the mother's like, Richard. He's like, okay, if you want to be a winner, because it's always about being a winner.
Yeah, right.
He has his, so, and I realize I'm going further away from what you were saying.
No, but this is great.
Every family has a culture, right?
Mm.
Our family, obviously, Indian movies, boxers, Catholics, you know, stuff like that. That's our culture. Your family.
Mm-hmm.
Has your culture.
Right. What,
science fiction conventions.
You've got, art writing, reading, movies. Yeah. I mean, we do. Yeah.
That stuff that you do. Mm-hmm. This is something
stuff your we do together. Right.
Right. And you're known for it and you love it, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, this family's culture is set by the father. And this also shows the importance of the father as a family leader, because however dysfunctional they are in terms of not being connected, you see in this movie, Dwayne and Olive are measuring themselves by, they don't want to be losers.
Hmm.
They both say it. And the father has put so much emphasis on being a winner, because that's all he talks about is his stupid nine steps, that he has influenced the family culture, that that's all they think about.
Hmm. Certainly, so, definitely all of that's yeah. what she thinks about too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's, you know, gosh, this is so well written. Yeah, because Frank is
right.
like from outside the culture, right? He's a visitor. And I guess Grandpa yeah. kind of is too. But Grandpa seems to have been there a while, yeah.
Yeah, but Richard doesn't care that Frank's from outside the family culture. He still says he's a loser for trying to commit suicide because he gave up on himself.
Yep, yep.
Winners never do that.
Winners would never.
I mean, yeah. his focus for everything is that stupid criteria. So anyway, we can go back to
you're right.
What you were saying about
but it's great. And to finish the thought, he ends up on the wrong side of that criteria. His own yeah. self, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what does that do? That opens the door for the grandfather to show a moment of grace.
Mm-hmm.
Because he actually comes and kneels down beside Richard. So he is lowering himself to be able to extend sympathy to him.
Hmm.
He puts his arms around him to tell him and support him. You tried. A lot of people would never do that.
Hmm.
Richard doesn't really care, but he does it.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good moment too. And that seemed a little out of character at that moment too, right? But he was mm-hmm. moved to do it, right? And
right,
yeah, it was a beautiful moment, you know. And
yeah,
he just said, what it meant to him. I know you tried to do something, and
right,
and yeah, that's more than so many people do, and that's great, you know. And at first, Greg Kinnear, whatever his name was, forget,
Richard,
right? He rejected it, right? He's right. like, he didn't know how to respond, right? Which is
right.
what a lot of people do when they receive a compliment. They don't know what to do. So it's like, get out of here. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then he does accept it though, right? In that same moment too.
Yeah.
Because,
absolutely.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, change right in front of you.
Yeah. And so everybody in this movie hits rock bottom, which is what you were talking about. You know, I mean, Frank runs, mm-hmm. I mean, of all the places, that roadside convenience store gas station where Frank runs into his ex-lover and the number two cruise scholar in America who took him away from him.
Oh, and he's buying magazines for his grandpa.
He's buying grandpa those horrible porn magazines. Oh, my gosh. And then Cheryl is the mother. Her support of her husband was for nothing. She put all that work into it and trusted her husband.
Yeah.
And he won't even address it or talk to her about it when it happens, because he's so broken up.
Yeah.
So she's furious. And then the grandfather hit rock bottom a long time ago. He's addicted to porn and heroin, and his son respects him so little he won't listen to him when he tries to encourage him.
Yeah.
So...
Wow.
Yeah.
And then every one of those, it's so good. I mean, they all intertwine. They're all going through this on this trip.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, the father says, we're going to get there on time.
No matter what.
Yeah. And let's not forget the van, because the van is like a dysfunctional member of the family too. Yeah, I mean, it was hard not to see that as one. It was so perfect. It's just, it's person number seven.
Well, the van is falling apart and the family's falling apart.
Oh, my God.
And they have to cooperate to make it run.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, they do,
and
right.
And pushing that, right, pushing that bus for the first time is the first time they have fun together.
Yeah, joined effort,
because they have
right?
to work together.
They have to work
something
together
they
to
all
do
need.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, and I loved when they left Olive at the convenience store. They push it and they get it running and they're like, oh no, where's Olive? But they can't stop. So they drive and he drives a loop around.
And they got the door open. They're going, run, honey, run. We can't stop. They get the hand sticking out the door.
Oh, so good. So good.
Oh, man. Yeah. And their determination is so great that, you know, Grandpa dies. And see, here's one of the things also that's kind of an interesting point. Grandpa has had two moments of grace, really, right? So he's had the moment when he has told his son, tried to encourage his son. Mm-hmm. And then he also, when Olive was feeling really, you know, I don't want to be a loser. Mm. And am I fat? And can I, you know, all these things. And he says, you're beautiful inside and out. And then he says, a real loser is someone who's so afraid of losing, they don't even try, which is profound. And then he goes in the bathroom and snorts heroin some more.
That's right.
Where he comes out, and then the next morning, he's sleeping in the same room as Olive. He can't wake up. So she gets to discover his dead body.
Yeah, crazy.
So kind of the thing there, I think, is you can have your moments of grace, but we're not perfect.
Mm.
We're a mixture of all these things. And sometimes you can break free from it, like everyone else in the movie does it, you know, by the end. Or you're like Grandpa, you've failed. He's had a whole lifetime of, you know, doing the wrong thing. And I got to say, I look at this and I go, at the end, that dance at the end.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm like, they're horrified. They're seeing this. They're horrified. And I'm like, you know what he was like.
Oh.
You left her unsupervised. And I know she's sweet and innocent, but clearly he's not operating on all cylinders, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Think of the advice he gives Dwayne in the back of the van. Get at what the young stuff is the best. You know? And there's like, ugh.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Which also, by the way, little fun trivia fact, people would watch that scene and go, oh my gosh, the little girl actress heard all that. And they said, no, she actually had headphones with real music on and they played it loud enough that she couldn't hear what anyone was saying.
Oh, wow.
And when they turned the music off is when she knew to turn around and say her line about, what are you guys talking about? Politics. Okay.
Politics.
Yeah. And put it back on and they put the music on again. So she couldn't hear anything. I thought was
so
really
good.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the, in the hospital when they decide, no, we're going, you know, cause the mom tells Olive, we'll go to this thing next year, dear. You know, she's like, it's over. It's over. Yeah. We're not doing this, but
we got to take grandpa. We've got all this paperwork to do,
but the dad is not having it. You know, he's like, no, we're going, we're going.
Yeah.
And they,
we've been beat by the system too many times, man.
Incredible, but very funny scene, you know, getting all that rolling, getting it out, getting the body out to the van.
Oh my gosh.
Oh geez. Yeah. Too funny.
Yeah.
Too
funny. It's just terrible. Yeah. It's funny. And of course, because the authorities are just being awful to them, in the whole place.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. And then, I just thought the ending was just so perfect, you know? It was perfect, you know, because
tell me why it was perfect.
Because Grandpa, okay, first of all, we're introduced to the pageant, right? So they just sprinted across the country and then they arrive there. And every one of them, even Olive, has a visceral reaction to what they're seeing. And, you know, I know Olive's concerned about performing and everything, but she's like, what am I doing here? And
I don't belong with these people.
And I don't belong with these people, right. And everybody else has a similar reaction. It's like, really, this is what the focus of this whole thing was, you know?
Well, it was because all those kids were actually real child pageant contestants.
Mm-hmm.
And they were dressed in their real clothes for those things and doing their real skills for those things. Mm. And you're just like, this is disgusting. It's right. Just
it was
perverted.
A little bit disturbing, you know?
It was real disturbing.
Yeah.
I was appalled.
Right.
As you're supposed
and then,
to be, because that's
so,
the reaction, as you say. Everyone's like, ugh.
So it's one of those things, you know, I imagine all those little actresses and stuff and their parents especially, when they watched the movie, I wonder what they thought. Because at the end, you know, when she comes out there, she decides to do it, right? She's given the way out. And she says, no, I'm going to do this, right? Because Grandpa taught me this thing.
Yeah.
And so now she goes out and she does it. And what it does is it makes a mockery of the entire thing that's going on, right? That's why I wonder what the pageant folks thought when they saw the finished movie. You know, they were probably very excited to be in a movie. But it was almost as if they just made fun of the entire concept of a beauty pageant for that age of person, you know?
Well, yeah.
And Grandpa did it, right? Grandpa was the one who put that thing together, you know?
Because he was thinking about it the way he was thinking about it, which was sex. And
right.
Yeah. And that's what disturbed me so much is seeing that young girl, seeing Abigail Breslin do that highly sexualized dance.
Oh, yeah.
I was so upset by that that I was like, this movie is disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I watched it the second time, it was that realization of, you know, this was really wise because what it was so much more honest than what the other contestants were doing because it's inappropriate because it's highly sexualized and so are those other contestants just in a different way that none of their parents seem to recognize as being disgustingly inappropriate. So basically the movie makers were taking that moment to kind of, as you were saying, to kind of contrast it. But the thing that, you know, I was like, yeah, I get this. This is gross. But that little girl, that little sweet girl doing that dance and thinking of the grandfather teaching her that dance was so horrifying to me. And then I went, but this is honest.
Mm.
This is the real meaning of what all those people are doing.
Mm.
They're just hiding it behind Barbie doll stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's way
incredible.
Too soon. They shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's, yeah. And it, Grandpa was present, like you said. And then everybody's so horrified by what she's doing, you know, which is, you know, for those of you who haven't seen the movie, I mean, it's like a striptease, but she is not taking her clothes off. She's got an outfit on under.
Yeah, she's got shorts underneath her tear-off pants.
Nothing too far, but she's doing the moves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and
she's
doing
them.
Yeah. And then the dad, who is horrified at what he's seeing, the son is like, yeah, I mean, he can see this for what it is. And, you know, it's Grandpa and this is making fun of everybody in here is horrified, which makes me happy. So, you know, and then they all end up on stage together and, to support her and what she did, taking a moment that could have destroyed her self-esteem and turning it into something very special, you know, being joined by everybody, you know, so I just thought it was perfect.
Yeah, because it's something that none of those people would have ever done if you took them straight from the beginning of the movie and put them in that setting.
Yes. Good point.
You know?
Yeah, good point. They had traveled there, right?
Right.
They had made it, you know, personally and physically.
Yeah, they had to come along through their sufferings and all their low moments and learn to, you know, you support each other, you sacrifice for each other because you want the other people to be happy.
Mm.
It's not about my own personal goal at that point because I care about the other people. And Olive is the impetus for all of this among them.
Mm-hmm.
Just because a lot of times they're trying to either protect her or go, oh, well, that's not appropriate in front of her or whatever. But they all benefit from it. And so they then, this is, you know, what does it mean to be a winner? This is what it means to be a winner.
Yeah.
You're still dysfunctional, maybe. You still don't know what you're going to do or you're, you know, doing a crazy dance in front of all these people and going to get arrested and everything, but you're supporting your family in the way you should.
Hmm.
You're sacrificing of yourself for their own good.
Yeah. And there you go. That's Christianity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's like, you know, again, people are always putting things ahead of God and putting things up on the pedestal, and they're saying money, you know, money, if I only had X number of dollars, then I'm going to be happy, you know. But but we all realize somewhere down the road that is not it, you know.
Yeah.
And right. Going through those things, going through those suffering is what gets us there, right? And it gets us to the realization, you know, God is at the top of the mountain. And really, God is the only thing big enough to fill it, right? Because even when you're successful and you reach a plateau on this mountain you've been climbing, there's only more mountain after that.
Yeah.
You know what I
right.
mean? That's all there is. And the only thing that's big enough to encompass everything is God.
Yeah.
You know? And,
exactly.
And exactly. And God, those relationships in the family are what is the manifestation. This is, you know, what they say, that marriage is like the, it's almost like a model of God's love for us. You know what I mean? I've heard it described that way. The sacrament of marriage is this sort of an outpouring of the love that God has for us on display in a couple, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, right. So it's like, but it's like that. So all of the relationships that we have all over the place, you know, God is present in, if we allow it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's because it's the outpouring of genuine love and joy in the other person's presence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being interested in them and everything. But it's also that idea of helping each other on the way, becoming better than you were because you're thinking of the other person first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wishing they're good.
I mean, this is Jesus. We see this embodied in him.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. Right.
Exactly.
And that
just
is the important
saying.
Thing. That's the treasure, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, we expected Jesus to come on a horse with a big sword, you know, taking out our
right.
enemies. But no, he was a baby. He was
vulnerable.
Well, that's
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a poor community.
Yeah.
All the things. Well, and so when you talk about that, the treasure, finding the treasure, the movie also is clearly, you know, as we've said, it's talking about winning and losing. And I don't know if you came across this, but the person who wrote the movie had read about Arnold Schwarzenegger telling high school students, if there's one thing in this world I hate, it's losers. I despise them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Losers.
Yeah,
I don't like them.
I could hear it. I could hear him saying, yes. Thank you. I should have let you read that. Then we would have really been there.
Oh, man.
So he wrote this movie, and he said, I thought there's something so wrong with that attitude. I wanted to attack that idea that in life you're going up or you're going down. To a degree, a child beauty pageant is the epitome of the ultimate, stupid, meaningless competition people put themselves through.
Wow.
And
wow,
the co
nice.
Yeah. And the co-director said, as far as the pageant goes, it was very important to us that the film not be about pageants. It's about being out of place. It's about not knowing where you're going to end up.
Yeah, that makes me wonder with all these pageant goers that they hired. I wonder how they felt about this movie when it was over.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's funny because there was one mother who they interviewed after, who said, well, this didn't show the pageant contestants at all correctly. And they said, oh, how so? And she goes, they don't spray tan their legs, and they don't do those dances like that, exactly like that. And I was like, that was it? That's what you got from this?
So some details there.
Yeah. Now, of course, maybe that's not fair, because that might not be everybody.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Something else that I was thinking about, though, because since I've mentioned before, I think here, that we're kind of working our way through consecutive years of the Oscars, what won, what was nominated. And the year we're working on right now is the 1939 Oscars.
Hmm.
And the movie that won that year was You Can't Take It With You.
Ah.
Have you seen it?
I have not only seen it, that was the first play I ever did.
Well, okay then.
Yeah.
So maybe you know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. This is Frank Capra, in the movie anyway.
Yeah.
And this is a kooky family. They are eccentric as can be, but what they are not is dysfunctional. They love each other. They accept each other's differences. They try to work for the common good. They're kind of lovable kooks.
Yeah.
You know, and even when you get to It's a Wonderful Life, if we stick with Frank Capra some, you know, those people are a little crazy. You've got Uncle Charlie with his, you know, can't remember, so he's got his, you know, string around his finger, that kind of thing. And think of how our view of the family has shifted now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really necessarily expect a family to be supportive of each other from the beginning. They can be.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time you get a movie like this, which is showing the struggles against modern life and the ideas, as you say, the different philosophies everyone had.
Mm-hmm.
The different ideas that have been brought in that are being followed and leading to all this relativism that is not conducive to community or close family, but tears us apart, makes us miserable, makes us not understand. I mean, I was going to say makes us not understand suffering, except I'm thinking of Dwayne, who clearly understood somehow the idea that you have to suffer to get something. I assume that's why he wasn't talking.
I would assume too. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was doing that. But it was useless. It was for nothing. It had nothing to do with his goal. So
very true, yeah.
It's just an interesting portrayal of the family. And everybody loved it and everybody related to it because, of course, they liked the message. Whether or not you talk about the philosophers, the message, of course, is everyone's redeemed by the end.
Hmm.
And the family is a unit by the end.
Yeah.
But so we know that's the goal. But it's, how do you get there? And so it's really interesting that the authors so directly reference Nietzsche and Proust.
Yeah, Proust. So I'm looking at the quote now. There's a moment while the pageant is being prepared that Dwayne and Frank get out of there and are standing at a pier looking at the ocean. But Dwayne said something like, you know, I wish I could skip high school. This is all stupid. And then Frank starts to talk about Proust, right?
Right.
And in Proust, he says, Proust was a French writer, total loser, never had a real job, unrequited love affairs, gay, spent 20 years writing a book that almost no one reads. But he's also probably the greatest writer since Shakespeare. He says, anyway, he gets down to the end of his life and he looks back and decides that all those years he suffered, those were the best years of his life. Because they made him who he was. All those years he was happy, you know, total waste. Didn't learn a thing, you know. So then he says to Dwayne, so if you sleep until you're 18, think of all the suffering you're going to miss.
It's prime suffering time, I would think.
Yeah, high school, those are your prime suffering years, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good
and
stuff.
And Dwayne's laughing and accepting it.
Right, right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the moment, too, when you think that Frank actually can maybe look at what he's gone through and appreciate what it's done for him, too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, him saying that out loud has got to trigger that in himself, too, where he's like,
and
oh,
then right. But then they go inside. And both of them just, I love the thing, they both kind of slip into the pageant room, and about 1 minute later, they come out both looking shell-shocked.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, oh, what did we just see? You know, I can't unsee it.
Oh,
and, you know, and that's when Dwayne goes running to find her, to find Olive
Dwayne's
and his
like,
mother and everybody.
I'm gonna go find Olive,
Right.
That's so good. Yeah.
He's and
like,
I love
I've got to prevent this from happening.
Well,
this is
And so what's happening is, the men in the family are coming together to protect Olive the way they should. And the mother hasn't seen any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do appreciate her saying, you got to let Olive be Olive.
Yeah.
So she does give Olive the choice. And she doesn't know exactly what Olive is choosing, although I guess she could get an idea from looking at the other kids getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
But Olive has to make her choice too. And that's her low moment. Really? Yeah. I mean, besides worrying about if she's fat, that's her low moment. And she goes through with it for Grandpa. And also because if you never try, then you're a loser.
Then you're a loser. Right.
Right. Yep. But the father also is going, you can't let her do this.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I loved it. They were all stepping up.
Right. And they learned the things. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well done.
You know, the ending did remind me of About a Boy as well. It's been a long time since I've seen that, but I remember, wasn't there a performance at the end where the kid was really singing horribly? I think
it's the school talent show.
Yeah.
And he's going to play Killing Me Softly on the guitar because he thinks it'll make his depressed mother
strumming happier. My pain with your fingers or something like that.
Exactly. Yep. Oh, my gosh. Yes, Roberta Flack. And
then out comes Hugh Grant to sing with him. Yeah.
He knows, because he knows they're just going to kill him. Those kids are just going to tear him apart. And so he comes out, you're right, and sacrifices himself. And you're right. It's he learns. He's not an island. He's not Ibiza or whatever island. He's like, I'm an island.
Your memory is so good. Yeah. You're spurring into me. Yeah. Island. He called himself an island. I'm an island. Yes. Yeah. But he's not an island. That's right.
Right. And the very end of that movie is everybody together at Christmas time.
Mm.
All the ones. They've all become friends and acquaintances and everything. And they're fixing a Christmas dinner together.
Yeah.
And this one is the whole family together. You know, driving away in that crazy van that's going beep, 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 but they can't stop, so they're going through the, arm that has come down in the parking lot, and, just...
Oh, that's so good.
That was just when that horn starts doing that, I'm like, of course it's happening like that, because that's just what would happen.
What would happen, yeah. Oh, so good. What a good movie. Yeah. I love it. Such a great choice.
I'm glad you liked it. After reading Christie, surprisingly, before I chose that to talk about, which we did last time, I just was struck by how many of the families in that book, through ignorance and just bad superstition and stuff, were dysfunctional, not in the same way, but not behaving as a family should.
Right.
And then I saw this and I went, well, this is the modern version of that, right? It's not the moonshine and the whatever and the ignorance. It's a different kind of ignorance.
Yes.
You know.
Right. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so I think it's a mistake too to for people to look at a family in a short little spread of time and say, oh, they've got it right. They're there's no suffering over there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Which I think is what the internet does to us all the time, little snippets of videos and stuff where we're seeing these little windows into, little gems of time in a life that we know nothing about.
And that intensifies it, and we can do the same thing just from the groups of people we're around without knowing tons about. So like different families at the schools kids would go to, and you'd look at them and go, oh, they've got money. They've got this nice house. They seem very happy together. Mm-hmm. All these things, right?
Yeah.
And when I did the Christ for Jesus Parish retreat, some of those people were in my retreat group. And if you stick with the process, eventually you wind up sharing as much as you will of your own faith journey, right? And some of these people were sharing things where you suddenly went, oh, everyone's got stuff. Everybody's got things that they're struggling with, that has happened to them, that all these things. And you're just like, oh, none of these people are perfect. And I don't need what they have because... the price paid for this thing was too high.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Beautiful
show. It's easy,
yep.
Yeah. So I'm glad you liked it. I was pleased to see it cost $8 million.
$8 million.
And it made $101 million.
Good for that.
Well, yeah, because you've got all these people who are semi-stars, but nobody really knows who any of them are.
Yeah.
Yep. Or they haven't yet become stars, like Paul Dano and Abigail Breslin. And then look at where they were shooting. It was in a house. It was in a hotel. It was on highways in front of a gas station, you know, at a motel. So all the places would have been very cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. For
easy
sure.
to find.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was nominated for 4 Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
That's right. Didn't Alan Arkin win?
Alan Arkin won for Best Supporting Actor because everyone loves a dirty old grandpa. I don't know what it is. Get him to swear and get him to do drugs or something, and everybody just loves it. He was great, but still.
Oh, that's
and then
too funny.
Best Original Screenplay, and I think that was really well earned. Yeah,
that's me too. Yeah. Gem, for sure. This is great.
And I will, if I may indulge myself.
Please.
I have plenty of places already. But one of the things I found notes on that I thought, this is just a bit of screen making or filmmaking stuff, symbolism, that I thought was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at the art of the film, we've talked already about how well the script intertwines and it's all put together so beautifully and shot everything. But the way the family members are isolated and trapped and judged as winners or losers is shown in the way they shot the film. So these are bullet points that I read, I got from somewhere, but they're constantly boxed in by their surroundings. So early on when we see them in the kitchen, it's showing the action through the rectangular breakfast bar between the wood paneled cupboards. A lot of it is shot in the van with the low ceiling and horizontal and vertical lines created by windows and seats. Even in the hospital where they're united in their grief, but they're separated by the way the chairs and the tables are, and they look hemmed in by the dark horizontal paneling on the walls.
Wow.
And it says, the world they live in is constantly constricted. In one shot, Olive looks up through the window as the van speeds down the road, but the blue sky is blocked by the winding and circular highways above her. And a point was made earlier in this piece I was reading, which says that, you know, they're all trying to find the American dream, but what road do you take to get to it? So there's all these highways going off in all these directions. You know, they're in the van on one of them, but you can go on all these different roads. And then it says the last scene is of a wide open highway from above, not boxed in. And they broke through the guard gate to leave the parking lot. So this is symbolic of their freedom now to continue as a family and find their way.
Very nice. Love it.
Yeah. I wish I remembered where I found it, so I would give credit if I could. But if you look up Little Miss Sunshine, you'll find all kinds of people talking about a lot of this stuff.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, and I was just wondering who. So I just looked up the author or the screenplay writer.
Michael Arndt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
know.
He's
written a very interesting group of stuff. So,
oh, really?
Little Miss Sunshine was the first one listed on IMDb. Okay. Then it says he wrote Toy Story 3.
Oh, really? That was good.
Yeah, it was. And Oblivion with Tom Cruise.
I haven't
seen
that.
The Hunger Games Catching Fire.
Okay.
Inside Out, he has a credit, additional story material by.
Okay. He came in and ran through the script then. Yeah.
And then he wrote, I guess, the latest Hunger Games movie, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, which was fairly good.
Okay.
But every one of them's like seven and a half or higher as far as stars.
Yeah, and they are all real different. You're right.
Yeah. Really good. So who directed this one? Did he go on?
There were two people who directed it.
Okay, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Ferris.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I don't have anything on
there. I'm not really seeing anything I recognize from Jonathan Dayton. Let's see about Valerie Ferris. Nothing I recognize. Interesting.
Yeah.
But, she's got an Apple TV project coming up. It says Untitled Jason Keller / Apple TV Project. So.
This tells me nothing.
Nothing at all. Whoever that is.
Yeah. Yep.
But anyway, yeah, very good. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, all right. So what have we got coming up now? It's
what
a book.
The
Charwoman's Shadow by Lord.
Yes.
Is it Dunsany or Dunsany?
I don't know. We will have
to find out.
Oh, Scott, I can't wait to find out on the next episode.
That's right.
How can I wait 2 weeks?
We'll just have
join
to
us,
suffer
listeners,
through
in the
that.
Anticipation.
If we yes. suffer, we will be better for it.
Yes, I will use it to grow as a person and to serve and love those around me better.
Very good.
I'll
good.
Go.
That's what
I'll
I was
all
hoping.
The time go around and I'll help them do it by saying Dunsany or Dunsany. Answer.
Oh, I love it. So good. Very good.
Yeah, and I must say, I hadn't heard of this. I like Lord Dunsany, I'll
yes.
say.
Yep.
And it's an interesting book because it's classic fairy tale style,
mm-hmm.
and you think you know where it's going a lot of the time, and then it just takes this twist. So I'm I'm a little over halfway through.
That's
and
good.
And it just suddenly took another twist where I was like, I know what she's going to do with that wine. Oh, my goodness. And then it does something I didn't expect.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
it.
I'm like,
good.
What thing is happening now? So, it's really an interesting choice. I'm
good.
Enjoying it.
I'm glad you are. Yeah, yeah. I keep finding stuff by him that I like a lot. I keep, just been reading him just every now and then. I'm like, oh, he's so good. And then Clark Ashton Smith is another one that I'm liking a lot.
I think. What has he written?
Everything I've read has been short, no novels.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So,
then
just a collection of stuff. So.
Got it.
Yeah.
I've been into Murray Leinster lately, if that's how you say his name.
Murray Leinster. Another one I'm into is Fritz Leiber. So these are
all. Also quite good.
Yeah. And it's the Fafford and Gray Mauser.
Of course it is. Yes.
You can see the dice rolling right behind the. It's just like, it's just where D&D came from is, it's one of the source documents. It feels
beside the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, of course. You bet.
Give credit where credit's due.
Absolutely.
But yes.
Yeah.
But yes, they're wonderful. I don't really care that much for sword and sorcery stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I love those a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm
in book two.
Yep.
Oh, there you go. I think I've read the two books, but not the other three I think there are of the stories.
Yeah.
So anyway, nobody cares about that right now, probably. But if you do, you're welcome. And if you don't, we're sorry. This is the suffering that makes you better.
Humbly
go look
apologize.
For those authors. Oh, yes.
I love it.
My apologies.
Too bad. All right. Well, we'll see you next time for The Charwoman's Shadow.
Yes. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.